The powers that be at Ubisoft talk about the future of the company, which is all about open worlds today on Polygon Minimap. Those of you who listened to the episode of Minimap directly preceding this one will know that we read about half of a feature that spoke about the division in Ubisoft's future. It's by Brian Crescente, or Crescenti, take your pick. And the first part of the feature covered Assassin's Creed and Far Cry. Today, we're going to finish up that feature with Watch Dogs, with the crew, and with the division. Let's do the news! Watch Dogs. Where Assassin's Creed and Far Cry have been slowly evolving into forward-looking franchises powered by streaming open worlds and hidden threads of connectivity, the crew, Watch Dogs, and the Division marked a far deeper approach to those ideas. Each of the games pushed the concept of open worlds and persistent connections to strange and interesting new places. Sometimes those ideas worked, and sometimes they didn't. The summer of 2012, specifically the E3 of 2012, belonged to Watch Dogs. Unveiled during Ubisoft's annual E3 press conference, Watch Dogs captured the attention of the world's gamers with its near-future take on open worlds and its exploration of privacy and hacking. It quickly became the golden child of the show. Watch Dogs was originally conceived as a game designed to push the limits of what an open-world title could be. Its vision of a near-future Chicago controlled by computers and rich with hacking opportunities found a passionate audience, but it also received some polarized reactions. Jonathan Morin, creative director on the game, believes that mixed reaction was in part due to the expectations people had for the title. This project was ambitious from the get-go, so we were very excited to have this opportunity to feed our minds with so much player feedback, he said. And the press feedback and our own internal data, and now we have everything we need to identify what worked and what could be improved. Watch Dogs is a great game, but it's also the beginning of something bigger. It explores very complex design problems, and it is a privilege to have so many players showing interest so we can continue to push ourselves. We are extremely proud of what we've created. Now the future is filled with exciting new learnings, which in the end, isn't it why we're making games, to shake things up a little bit? Watch Dogs didn't just deliver an open world. It also allowed players to sort of float in and out of each other's experiences, helping and hacking each other in bits of gameplay that weaved the online and offline together, making it hard to pull the two apart. While for the most part that seemed to work, it also made it a challenge to balance the game's narrative open-world play with other players. There were some aspects we delivered spot on with our vision and a few that may not have come through in the end as we would have liked, Morin said. And these learnings are always something we evaluate and think how we can make it even better on our next project. The crew. About 6 months after Watch Dogs hit in 2014, Ubisoft released its biggest attempt at disruptive innovation to date, and it didn't go as well as expected, at least not initially. Where Watch Dogs pushed hard on what it meant to be an open-world game and threaded in elements of persistent connectivity, the crew attempted to reimagine how a constant internet connection could shape the way you play a racing game. The crew is essentially a massively multiplayer online racing title that stretches across a United States made a bit smaller for gaming purposes. Artificial intelligence, typically a gamer's main play pal in a title, still runs the walking populace of the game's many living cities and controls the traffic of everyday simulated life in that world. But the challenge of the crew, the real meat of the races, comes from other players brought in and out of your gaming world through the crew's persistent online connection. The idea was to create a living backdrop upon which game developers could continue to paint in new elements and details. The crew was meant to be a living game world that would essentially always be its own sequel, said Julian Garrity, creative director of The Crew, before its release back in 2013. Though The Crew arrived well after Microsoft's missteps with the Xbox One launch, gamers were still wary of the idea of games that required an online connection to be played. That hampered The Crew's launch, illustrating that it was perhaps a bit too soon for such a game to thrive. Back then, we were nervous to talk about a game that needed a persistent online connection, especially on consoles, said Anne Blondell, who was the executive producer on The Crew during its launch. Now she's Ubisoft's vice president of live operations. There were a lot of internal discussions about it because we understood it was going to be a concern for some players, but we believed that the crew's innovative gameplay, especially the ability to encounter other real players while driving and instantly team up or compete against them, made it worth the risk. In many ways, we succeeded in what we wanted the crew to be. Most players told us they enjoyed the game, especially the seamless transitions from single player to multiplayer and the really big open world US setting. But the crew also taught Ubisoft some important lessons about delivering a game not as a final package, but as an evolving service. Since launching the crew across Ubisoft, we've worked to improve our online infrastructure, provide better community events, support, and tools, and also deliver more regular game improvements and updates post-launch, Blondell said. We're organizing our teams around the idea that instead of launching a game and moving on to the next one, we need to deliver live games that provide long-lasting entertainment for players. That's what's expected now, and it's what we're delivering with games like Rainbow Six and The Division, and it's what we learned thanks in part to the crew. Despite receiving mixed reviews for the crew at launch, the team working on the game has continued to support it. In November, Ubisoft released the Wild Run expansion for the crew. Not only did it bring new vehicles to the title, like motorcycles and monster trucks, it also completely overhauled the game's graphics. The result was a 20% spike in players and proof at Ubisoft that such support increases the life of a game, Blondell said. There will still eventually be new versions or sequels for these big connected multiplayer games, she said. What's changed is that instead of releasing a game, having people play and move on after a few weeks, and then starting to think about a sequel, we now plan for regularly delivering post-launch content and services that keep players engaged and entertained in the game for months or even years after the initial release. If it works well, it means players are getting more fun and value for their money and can stay engaged with a community that enjoys sharing these experiences. It also means we can take more time to decide on whether we should do a sequel, what it will add to the game's universe, and if players will see it as innovative and different enough that a large part of the community will embrace it. That's the new approach that Ubisoft is focusing on now. Stefan Fergus Beely, the crew's game director, said that approach is in perfect accordance with Ubisoft's vision of the game as a service. After the crew was released, he said, we brought free monthly updates to the game, including new content to satisfy our players' expectations in the long run. As a result, we built a strong and active community around the game, and the next step for us was to bring in new gameplay and challenges. As Ubisoft worked hard to slowly build up support for the crew, the company was helped along in part by players becoming more accustomed to the idea of always online games. Much of the initial fear, Blondell said, uncertainty and doubt about not having an offline mode has gone away. Also, they've since played other games like Destiny that require a persistent connection and still deliver a good experience. Another part of changing people's minds is, as I said, we improved our online infrastructure and our community management, which means that the level of post-launch support we've provided to players has been improving over time. The increased internal support for online infrastructure, the lessons learned from making and evolving online and persistent games for nearly a decade, and even the completion of other massive always online games have seemed to come together to set the stage for what seems to be the perfect online climate for Ubisoft's biggest leap into the unknown yet. More news right around the corner, but I want to take a minute to tell you about our sponsor who's making Minimap possible today. Today's sponsor is Casper Mattresses, obsessively engineered American-made mattresses at a shockingly fair price. And now you can get $50 toward any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/polygon and using the code Polygon. You spend about a third of your life sleeping, or if your name's Dave Tack, somewhat less. Let's make sure you're doing it on a good mattress. Casper brings together two technologies for better nights and brighter days. The first one is latex foam. The second is memory foam. So that gives you just the right sink, just the right bounce, no matter how you sleep. Buying a mattress on the internet might sound a little strange, but Casper has you covered. They have a risk-free trial and return policy. They'll deliver it straight to you, and you can try it for, this is not a joke, 100 days, and if you're not happy, they will pick it back up. At the store, you get, what, a couple of minutes to try their mattresses. With Casper, you get to sleep on it for months. It's $500 for a twin-size mattress and $950 for a king-size mattress. If you compare that to industry averages, that is an outstanding price point. So get $50 toward any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/polygon and using the code Polygon. Of course, terms and conditions apply, and we'd like to thank Casper Mattresses for sponsoring Polygon Minimap. The Division. Imagine a game that combines the open-world chops of Far Cry and Assassin's Creed with the near-future aesthetics and clever online components of Watch Dogs with the best of the crew's take on peopling a virtual world with players and non-players. Now give that concept a team that has been quietly helping on some of those games, always striving, even before its days at Ubisoft, to make online play better. The result is Tom Clancy's The Division, and Ubisoft hopes a glimmer of what the future of the company and games in general has in store for all of us. The Division has been in development from the ground up for several years, said Martin Hultberg, brand director at Ubisoft Massive. The development of the Snowdrop engine allowed us to truly create an immersive and living, breathing world. This was the core, the backbone for what we wanted to do in Tom Clancy's The Division. And while we certainly respect and appreciate a lot of what other studios at Ubisoft have done in regard to open world games and online, Massive and all the studios involved really wanted to do something beyond what had previously been achieved. So while there may be elements that are similar, the game was designed with specific goals and gameplay needs in mind. Developer Ubisoft Massive's journey to become the lead studio on The Division may have started with Assassin's Creed Revelations and Far Cry 3, but it wouldn't be any stretch to say that even its work prior to joining Ubisoft led to where it is now. In 2007, Massive Entertainment released World in Conflict. The online game's intriguing take on real-time tactics helped to garner it a slew of Best Strategy Game awards and eventually lead to the sale of the company to Ubisoft. Hultberg says that while it may not be initially obvious, World in Conflict, which had players controlling armies in quick skirmishes, shares some bonds with The Division, despite the latter being a third-person action shooter. First and foremost, he said, the realistic setting and being grounded in reality meant we had to deal with gameplay implementations in a similar fashion. Then there's also the online focus and the complexity of systems. While World in Conflict wasn't anywhere near The Division in scope, it was still a highly complex game system-wise. Once purchased by Ubisoft, the team was tasked with helping out on Assassin's Creed Revelations and then on Far Cry 3. For Assassin's Creed Revelations, we worked on the part where you play Desmond, called Desmond's Journey. On Far Cry 3, we basically did everything multiplayer, so co-op and PvP. I think it's hard to point to any one specific major learning from either of those. They were our first console games, though, so we did learn a lot about developing games for consoles for sure. In general, it's more the case of increasingly mastering the trade for each product you release. You learn so many things in the different disciplines required to make a AAA game. Before there was The Division, there was Snowdrop, a proprietary game engine designed over 5 years for Ubisoft's PC, Xbox One, and PlayStation 4 games, and eventually, The Division. Snowdrop is designed from the ground up to empower the sorts of worlds and experiences that Ubisoft has increasingly made its core design philosophy. That means it supports procedurally generated environments, streamlines connected core game systems together, and allows developers to constantly check live versions of the game during the development process. Launched this week, The Division seems to seamlessly and endlessly blend single-player and multiplayer together. It gives gamers the choice of playing in an environment where other players can't do them wrong or entering the dark zone where all bets are off and play quickly swivels between cooperative and competitive. In The Division, players are able to play through in single-player. However, the best experience is found when teaming up with three other players and taking on missions as a squad, Hultberg said. This is done seamlessly in-game, allowing players to stay in the universe and sync up with other players without having to exit out to a lobby, which we felt would be an unnecessary break from the game. After hand-holding opening levels in Brooklyn, The Division quickly opens up the world to allow players to do whatever they want in a ravaged Manhattan. It's simple to gather friends or strangers by your side to go on missions or simply explore the world. And that balance between written narrative and player-created storytelling is an important one. The Division is a very open world, and while there are narrative directives, players will have the choice to determine how and when they wish to explore the world and the stories within it, Hultberg said. We think that variety and freedom are two compelling elements to The Division that make it special, and how it all ties in organically to gameplay, story, and narrative is key. It helps that The Division's backstory intrinsically relies on the collapse of order and a sense of chaos. The game takes place following a smallpox pandemic during Black Friday caused by someone deliberately planting the virus on cash. Within 5 days, with basic services at a standstill, the government collapses and the country falls apart. Players take on the roles of agents in The Division, a secret group meant to help maintain or restore order if such a collapse were ever to happen. That backdrop of chaos, even with the narrative missions, serves as a perfect landscape for meaningful player-driven stories and escapades, it turns out. To push those organic moments a bit more and to make the game more welcoming to a broader audience, The Division wasn't designed to be a straight third-person shooter. Rather, it's a blend of action, shooting, and role-playing. There's a strong twitch and aiming element, but the key to real power is in managing the relationship between stats of the weapons and gear you use, Hultberg said. By using the right weapon, with the best mods attached and supported with the appropriate gear items, you can significantly change how effective you are in combat. On top of this, you have special skills or abilities that further increase your power. By equipping seeker mines, ballistic shields, or turrets, for example, you can vastly change how both you play the game and your efficiency with different tasks. This gives you lots of tactical options, which are interesting not just for solo play, but also let you find your special niche within a team. The Division adds an extra element with the inclusion of the Dark Zone, areas on the map where players can and will hunt and kill each other. The Dark Zone is basically a high-risk, high-reward setup, Hultberg said. In the zone, you have a higher chance of finding powerful weapons and gear. That comes with the risk of encountering other players, at which time you cannot be sure of what their intentions are. The zone is a free-for-all multiplayer area where collaboration or hostility is simply a player decision, not something decided by a system in the game. That means you can trust no one, and a person you believed to be a friend can turn out to be a backstabbing enemy at the worst time possible. The idea for the Dark Zone, the ability to cooperate for big payouts and then, if you want, turn on your allies, kill them, and steal their gear, came from a question the team asked of itself early on. Why, when, and where would Division agents ever turn on each other? The answer eventually became the Dark Zone. This question helped us develop the design of the Dark Zone and gave it better context and a reason, Hultberg said. And with the new element of being able to enter the Dark Zone and give players a choice to be friendly or foes was where that really took off. We saw this in early play tests. It's in this moment of tension where the game really takes off and changes everything. The feedback from players in our beta tests was overwhelmingly positive, and the videos we've seen on YouTube and Twitch reinforced for us that this approach worked. Those moments are often outrageous to the player and almost certainly laced with emotion. The key is that the Dark Zone and all of its great gear remains trapped there, unusable, until you call in a helicopter to have that gear extracted. Calling a helicopter is as subtle as one might expect, and the result is usually a gathering of agents waiting for a chance to extract very valuable gear. Ubisoft Massive then typically tosses in a mix of AI-controlled bad guys and the opportunity for any of your fellow agents to grab your gear and quickly extract it simply by killing you. The results are contentious. Sometimes amazing, sometimes unbearable firefights over gear players worked hours to earn. It makes for great gaming and even better stories. I think the Dark Zone offers a quite unique, tense multiplayer experience, Hultberg said. The highly immersive world is also something I think many gamers will fall in love with. The level of detail, dynamic weather, dynamic day and night cycle, high fidelity graphical features. While Massive was the lead studio, it wasn't the only one working on this culmination of Ubisoft's evolving game design philosophy. Ubisoft Red Storm, Ubisoft Reflections, and Ubisoft Annecy all eventually came together to work on various aspects of the game, including weapon design, as well as building the world and populating it. The future. While The Division marks an important moment in Ubisoft's history, it isn't the only game that will be a part of the developer's future. Earlier this year, Ubisoft announced that there wouldn't be a new Assassin's Creed in 2016, so the company could take the time to re-examine the franchise and decide how best to evolve its mechanics. "We want to take the time to develop a great game," Assassin's Creed game director Lambert said. "Since the first Assassin's Creed, we have developed the knowledge on how to craft an open-world game, and we worked very hard to understand what it means and implies. This was challenging but thrilling. Today, our development teams are eagerly looking toward the future as we have the ambition and desire to fully challenge ourselves about what it will be to actually play an open-world game in the years to come. We want players to feel that their experience of playing Assassin's Creed feels unique and meaningful. We actively participated in defining what playing an open-world game actually means, but we are working hard to continue to push our technologies and ideas further." And online persistence in gaming is only going to get more important, Morin said. A Watch Dogs sequel is also in the works, given life by the commercial success of the original game. Earlier this year, Ubisoft confirmed the sequel would be coming out no later than March 2017. Watch Dogs creative director Morin declined to discuss how the new game differs, but said that the team is, quote, "excited and working hard to make it a great experience. I think we're just beginning to see the tip of the iceberg in terms of where open world games are heading, and it's both exciting and challenging," he said. Ubisoft has made a commitment to continue pushing the genre even further. "I think there will be more online presence in all games, but it will take many new forms," he said. "I think that developers have some ideas about what those new forms could be, but we can't just draw the line from point A to point B and expect to get there. It's going to take the community of players and fans to help guide what each step along that path looks like. Online, and especially persistence, is a form of social experiment, so it could take a myriad of different forms depending on how each game community evolves. So the future of online is heavily tied to the cultural impact of connectivity in our society." The Far Cry team said it dreams of a, quote, "living world that has no design shortcuts and operates just like reality. That's what we hope to build or play in this life." The team behind The Division, now working through its launch week, already is planning on what it'll be bringing to the game in the future. "For Ubisoft and The Division, games as a service is something we strongly believe in," Massive's Hultberg said. "It's really about a development team creating a world and experience and having a strong connection with the community to make sure it meets expectations. This includes everything from customer service, design elements, receiving input on features, and listening to what could make the game better." Looking back to 2013, when Ubisoft was in the thick of new releases from the Far Cry and Assassin's Creed teams and well into development on The Crew, Watch Dogs, and The Division, Yves Guillemot, the CEO, says he thinks that persistent online gameplay and open worlds are even more important today than they were back then. "Look at the biggest hits of the past few years," he said. "GTA, Fallout, Destiny, Watch Dogs. Outside of Call of Duty and esports titles, the most successful and acclaimed games are open worlds. In 2008, open world games had less than 10% of the market. Now, it's 33%. And almost all of the biggest and most popular titles have multiplayer or co-op options for players to enjoy if they want. We are in a good position to capitalize on these trends. We've got great franchises in place with Assassin's Creed, Far Cry, Watch Dogs, and Rainbow Six. We're launching The Division, and we have Ghost Recon, For Honor, and another new IP on the horizon. Now we have to deliver on all of these great franchises and make sure they have the level of quality and innovation that gets players excited and coming back for more." Where does Ubisoft see gaming going in the future? Today, it's all about open worlds, online connections, blending written stories with emerging ones, and constructed play with organic experiences. The future, Guillemot believes, will be bigger, more engaging experiences driven by passionate players. Video games, he said, will continue to play an increasing role in influencing other forms of entertainment like movies and TV. Eventually, we could even combine the great storytelling and character development of films with the interactivity and choice of video games into entirely new experiences. Finally, like always, there is enormous potential in new hardware like AR and VR, and we will use that to make games even more immersive and fun. It is a great time to be part of the video game community. that was the biggest news from Ubisoft of the day. Tried a little something different today. Really, largely, because that feature is so good, I think, and so insightful, that I kind of did a bit of a mashup here between Minimap and what could arguably have been an episode of Polygon Longform, our features podcast. I hope you liked it, but, you know, as I've been saying for the past couple of days, I'm thinking about Minimap's future, thinking about different ways to approach things. Not completely change it, not to get rid of the regular news cycle, but to try something new. So we will return to the regular news cycle, but today I wanted to do something a little different. Speaking about doing things different, if you've been listening this week, you know that I created a fancy schmancy survey. It is online on the internet, accessible in your web browser at bit.ly/minimapsurvey, bit.ly/minimapsurvey. If you go there and you take 5 or so minutes, you can tell me how you listen to the show, tell me how I can improve the show, tell me what you like, what you don't like, and as a special added bonus, I included a super secret podcast for anyone who ventures over there. About 200 of you have already, which is amazing. And I just want to take a moment to say thank you to all who have done so far. You're going to be a big help. So bit.ly/minimap, bit.ly/minimap to take that survey. Let me know what you think of the show, how you listen, all of the kind of stuff that I don't know unless you tell me. All right, that is it. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you right back here tomorrow.